Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
I was lying on the grass of Sunday morning of last week, indulging in my self-defeat. My mind was thugged on least, but it's all twisted wrong and beat.
On your desk, if you were reelected, would you sign it at 15?
Are you talking about a complete ban?
A ban at 15 weeks?
Well, people are starting to think of 15 weeks. That seems to be a number that people are talking about right now.
Would you sign that?
I would sit down with both sides and I'd negotiate something, and we'll end up with peace on that issue for the first time in 52 years. I'm not going to say I would or I wouldn't. I mean, DeSantis is willing to sign a 5-week and 6-week ban.
Would you support that? You think that goes
too far? I think what he did is a terrible thing and a terrible mistake.
So yesterday, I did a lot of coverage of this NBC interview with Kristen Welker, her first Meet the Press show, as the primary host. And I told you that President Trump showed that he doesn't understand the issue of abortion. He's not ideologically committed to the life cause. He might be pro-life, but, you know, and certainly he had a pro-life effect as a president. I mean, you can't argue that. Okay. The effect of having nominated the court justices that he did led to the Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade. No argument, obviously, but that it's not his issue. He's never been an ideological conservative. And that's why it's always funny to me when he uses the term rhino, and I always think, sir, you know, you're not really a conservative. You never have been. You might align with certain Republican agenda items, but you're just not on the same page, never have been, and tried to change the Republican Party into your mold, which then saying that, you know, not being pro-Trump makes you a rhino. It's a crazy world we live in. All that aside, I told you yesterday that he doesn't have the ideology or the, you know, he hasn't thought out the framework of abortion, doesn't know answers to questions like, does the baby have constitutional rights? Is it a baby? When is it a baby? He seems uncomfortable with early bans on abortion. And even a 15-week ban, he's kind of like, well, people are starting to talk about this. Well, sir, people have been talking about these issues for years and years. Did you just discover the conversation? Anyway, this bore out yesterday. There were lots of people reacting, pro-life leaders reacting to this commentary that he gave on Meet the Press and criticizing him for basically dropping the ball across the board on the issue of abortion in this interview. You know, leaders of major pro-life organizations either saying nothing, which is a commentary because they feel like, well, they don't want to cross Trump or they don't want to come across as against Trump to the Trump base that might be their donors, or outright saying, no, sir, no, this is a mistake. Well, in that particular clip, you heard him criticize Governor DeSantis, who, of course, is running against him for the primary, for the nomination for the party, and saying that it was a terrible decision. Well, Governor DeSantis was on Radio Iowa yesterday after the NBC interview and was asked about it.
As you well know, former President Trump said during an interview with NBC's Meet the Press that the 6-week abortion ban you signed was a terrible mistake. What do you make of that statement?
Protecting babies with heartbeats is not terrible. Donald Trump may think it's terrible. I think protecting babies with heartbeats is noble and just. And I'm proud to have signed the heartbeat bill in Florida. And I know Iowa has similar legislation.
So he says Trump's comments are terrible.
As you well know, former president.
Oh, excuse me. That's the full clip. Here's some more of the rest of it.
I don't know how you can even make the claim that you're somehow pro-life if you're criticizing states for enacting pro-life protections for babies that have heartbeats.
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue, right? He's criticizing pro-life states like Florida, putting in a 15 and then a 6-week ban. And of course, you know, Alabama and Louisiana and the others have it at 0 weeks, no abortion at all. Georgia, I think, is a 6-week. And, you know, making that claim by President Trump, very, very problematic. And also,
I thought him saying that those bills were terrible, I think, was a terrible statement. And I think it's a window into how he's changing as he's running this campaign. And I think he's changing in a way that is not consistent with the values of the people in Iowa.
Yeah, he's taking on a moderate position, maybe in an effort to appeal to moderates, which is kind of an unusual one for him. But maybe that's kind of his strategy here, is I'm going to move to the middle. But again, that's a problem, because if he's moving to the middle on abortion, what won't he move toward the middle on? And is he really pro-life, which is what Governor DeSantis, how can you call yourself pro-life if you don't support a heartbeat level bill? Now, I mean, I don't know any what I would consider serious pro-lifers who have any question about under, you know, like you might say, well, 6 weeks is early to know. Okay, is early to know. But pro-lifers don't think early to know means it's not a baby. All the serious pro-life activists and advocates that I know were all thrilled to have a six-week bill. All of them, you know, and so he's right. Like, pro-life people are not saying, oh, 6 weeks, I don't know about that. You know, they're certainly not saying that, oh, yeah, up to 15 weeks is fine, because that's a long way into pregnancy. So, again, you know, it's not just I said it yesterday. You have people like Live Action president and founder Lila Rose said Trump's comments were pathetic and unacceptable. Trump is actively attacking the very pro-life laws he made possible by Rose overturning. Heartbeat laws have saved thousands of babies, but Trump wants to compromise on babies' lives. As pro-abortion Democrats like him, he should not be the GOP nominee. And then there were none. Abby Johnson criticized this. I mean, just, you know, this is the point. This issue is very problematic for Trump all of a sudden, and it's a weird thing to say to give space to his opponents. Now, he was asked about more about this, you know, like, would you support a federal ban on abortion when it comes to, you know, at the federal level, which is kind of what Trump was talking about and asked about yesterday. Again, this is DeSantis.
On Saturday at the Iowa Faith and Freedom Coalition event, you said as president you would support abortion restrictions at the state and the federal level. Would you sign the nationwide 15-week ban that the Faith and Freedom Coalition supports?
So I've said from the beginning of this, as president, you put pro-life legislation on my desk, I'm going to look favorably and support the legislation. The point I made there, and I've made throughout the campaign, is, you know, we've had a lot of progress made in some states, like Iowa. Florida did a heartbeat bill. But we've also had some setbacks in some of these states with some of these referenda, where I don't think the pro-life community was ready when Dobbs came down. And so I just want to make sure that we're focusing on this as a bottom-up movement, because I think a lot of those fights are going to happen over the next few years. I mean, for example, the left is going to try to put something on the ballot in Florida to overturn our heartbeat bill. We need to be prepared to be able to defend against that. And I think that that's really, really significant. And those are absolutely fights that are going to have that are going to take place over these next few years.
So I think when you hear Governor DeSantis talk about this issue, as somebody who is ideologically committed to the cause of life, it's just a completely different way of talking about it than President Trump. He was even asked about, like, the deal making thing. You know, well, what about the claim that he's going to broker a deal between conservatives and liberals on this issue and bring peace in the nation?
Trump also indicated he would negotiate a deal on abortion that's acceptable to both sides. Do you think that's possible?
Well, here, I think the danger that we all have to look at is when he was president, and I, you know, supported his stated policies, and I've given him credit for his accomplishments, whether it's the court appointments, whether it's the Abraham Accords or other things, the deregulation, and I think he does deserve credit for that. But anytime he did a deal with Democrats, whether it was on budget, whether it was on the Criminal Justice First Step Act, they ended up taking him to the cleaners. And so I think if he's going into this thing, he's going to make the Democrats happy with respect to right to life. I think all pro-lifers should know that he's preparing to sell you out. And so I don't think that what he's saying would work. And I don't think he would be able to generate a quote deal that would be acceptable to pro-lifers.
So very interesting the way the life community has responded, to the pro-life community has responded to this abysmal interview that President Trump did with Kristen Welker on the subject of abortion particularly. And then you have this news. I don't know if you saw this. They mentioned it in the top of the hour on Fox, but President Trump during, you know, Rosh Hashanah, he put out a note in which he said that, you know, you've got to beware of these liberal Jews who voted to destroy America and Israel. The what now? Just what? Okay. Odd note to make on Rosh Hashanah. Jerusalem.
Or any time.
But, you know, particularly during Rosh Hashanah. He put out a picture of himself with, on the Truth Social is a picture of himself. And then there was a bunch of the things that he did, okay, a bunch of the things that he, all of which I give him great credit for, you know, moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, recognizing Israel's sovereignty, recognizing over several areas, signing an executive accord for Judaism to be the nation, to be a nationality and a religion, and the Never Again Education Bill, all of which he deserves credit for. But then here's what he wrote above it. Just a quick reminder for liberal Jews who voted to destroy America and Israel because you believed false narratives. Let's hope you learn from your mistake and make better choices moving forward. Happy New Year. So, which there is a very deep disagreement between liberal Jews and conservative Jews and even Orthodox Jews who politically are conservative. And there is this real tension because Judaism, being a Jew can mean so many different things. You know, you can be Jewish sort of and genealogically, you can be Jewish politically, you can be Jewish religiously, you can be Jewish just by nation, you know, by like where your, you know, your citizenship is. And there is a deep divide between liberal and conservative Jews. So in some ways, I understand where he's coming, but it's not the kind of thing non-Jews say a lot. It's not the kind of thing that, you know, non-Jews commonly say, you know, just a reminder, you liberal Jews, like, nah. So, and then, by the way, I think I mentioned this yesterday as well, the comments that he made about it was his decision to thwart and protest or try to thwart and protest the election and to stop in any way he could, the transfer of power. That's a massive liability for him in his trials because the ability to blame other people for making those decisions is going to be part of the key to him making his defense. And he's just isolated that defense from being able to make it. So I don't know what's going on here, but you don't make those kind of really bad decisions unless, I mean, I don't know if they're just mistakes. I don't know if he thinks these are winning strategies. I don't know if he's trying to sabotage his own reelection campaign. I don't know what's going on. It's weird. I'll just tell you, it's weird. Hey, 523 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Some days I cover up because of my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Now I'm hitting the road with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, risankizumab rizza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, 3 out of 4 people achieved 90% clearer skin at 4 months. And Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist prescribed biologic in psoriasis, and visit skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Mow, dig, haul, lift. The versatile Kubota BX Series subcompact tractor does it all. Switching attachments is simple, and a smooth hydrostatic transmission makes for easy operation. The Kubota BX Series, rated number one in durability and owner experience. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo. Go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Visit the friendly folks at Coastal Machinery, now with 40 years in the business. Locations in Pensacola and Crestview.
Greater Pensacola's leaders are in the tallest buildings and smallest shops. And they come together here to drive growth in innovation, to bridge industries, to share fresh ideas, and to understand how they can play a part in Greater Pensacola's success. The Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. We believe local businesses are the cornerstone of a great community.
Join us tomorrow for a special Foo Foo Fest edition of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Joining us will be Therese Felt McKenzie, the chair of the Pensacola Foo Foo Festival, Nicholas Stacey, the curator, and Robbie Schrock, the public relations liaison. The 10th anniversary of Pensacola's Foo Foo Fest is coming up soon, and you can get all the details on the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10:30. Pensacola's Foo Foo Festival. Bigger, funnier, artier.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk, 9 to 11, before Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
You're not to approve of your methods.
Yeah? Well, you're not from Chicago.
Yeah, you know, to be fair, The Untouchables is a great movie. It really is a great movie.
What's it about?
Oh, it's about Elliot Ness taking down Al Capone.
Oh, okay.
And you've like not seen The Untouchables?
No, I know. It's Kevin Costner, right?
Yeah. And Sean Connery and Robert De Niro plays Al Capone. So.
Oh, okay. So it's like Goodfellas in reverse.
Yeah, sort of.
Okay. I'll watch that. It's
5:26 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Somebody texted in and said, as a Jew, where'd it go? I am Jewish and I agree with Trump. My response was, I think a lot of conservative Jews would, but it's still not the sort of thing non-Jews usually say, right? And he says, true, but I don't understand where the liberal Jews are coming from, like my two sisters. Which, yeah, there is. There's a deep gap between liberal Jews and conservative Jews, and it is kind of an odd one. I don't pretend to understand it as an outsider, but then again, I don't understand liberal Catholics. You know, versus Orthodox Catholic. I will say, yeah, you know, Orthodox Catholics. It's such a weird thing. I'm like, you know, your religion says this. And I understand your religion really well. I'm not a member, but I understand it. I admire it in a lot of ways. And like, how can you believe that when your religion says this? It's just so weird to me. 437. But, you know, I try to be cautious about scolding people from outside of a religious view about whether they're honoring their own religion. You know, it's kind of an odd position for people to take. Oh, by the way, I was reading more about this post that I hadn't read every word of it, and so I wanted to go back and make sure. This is interesting. The post that President Trump put up. This is the most pro-Trump. This is the most Trump thing I think I've ever said. It says, "Wake up, sheep." What? N-A-T-Z-I? What Nazi? Yeah. Well, it's just a weird spelling, right? N-A-T-Z-I. What Nazi anti-Semite ever did this for the Jewish people or Israel? I guess there are some people who are saying that he's that. Okay, whatever. And then he's got, you know, this is on his Truth Social post. Number one, Trump makes the American embassy, moves the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which is Israel's true capital. No other president had the balls to do it. What? And I think, you know, Trump supporters are going to be like, that's my president. So, okay. Oh, and the post, again, it goes through a list of all the great things he did for Israel, again, which I agree with and celebrate him for, rightly so. And then he says at the end, clearly one of the greatest anti-Semites of our time, like satirical, sarcastic, but wow. Okay, so David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
This Truth Social post brought to you by the Ambien Walrus. The Marine Corps is suspending flights for 2 days, Andrew, after that F-35 disappeared for hours after the pilot safely ejected in South Carolina. Debris from that plane, though, was found eventually about 100 miles north of Charleston. The incident has probably rightly raised a lot of questions about just how they could lose an F-35 jet.
Well, it is a stealth fighter.
Oh, that's true. It is.
I think when we were talking about this yesterday, I don't know whether it had not come out yet or I just didn't know, but he ejected and put it on autopilot. So it was like,
right.
Well, this could have been flying for another several hundred miles after that, they really didn't know anything about where it went. Which, by the way, planes are designed. There's actually this famous story about a plane that was in a flat spin that the pilot couldn't get out. He ejected, and the ejection corrected the flat spin, and the plane kept going after that because it was an autopilot. Landed in a field, and then it kept flying on the ground a little bit.
Right.
Like crazy. Anyway, sorry, David. I interrupted.
Is it still missing?
No, they found it. They think they found it.
The next versions are going to be $80 million and $100.
Yeah, that's right.
They can add an Apple AirTag.
I love the... That's right. Yeah, I love the $80 million plus $550 for shipping. And the milk carton. And the on the light pole. And the, you know, I've got one in my garage. Oh, my God, the memes. You were so right. The memes are hilarious, David. David Wayne, I'll have your local news coming up next after we both stop laughing.
News. I'm Chris Foster. Five Iranian Americans freed in a prisoner swap have arrived back in the United States, traded for five Iranian prisoners in U.S. custody and the release of $6 billion in frozen oil money. President Biden's in New York City addressing world leaders this morning.
President Biden will address the United Nations General Assembly as many UN countries continue to rally support for Ukraine. The White House says President Biden is expected to have several sideline meetings, including with Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Fox's Ryan Schmelz. The Indian government denies an accusation that it's behind the assassination of an activist in Canada.
The Indian government says it's absurd to suggest it had something to do with the death of Hardeep Singh Nijjar. The Sikh independence campaigner was shot dead in Canada in June. Yesterday, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said there were credible allegations the Indian state was involved.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3, 67 degrees. Partly cloudy skies right now in Pensacola. A Pensacola man's been indicted on charges related to that shooting at O'Reilly's Uptown Bar last July. Channel 3 reporting 22-year-old Trevor Vanderhall Jr. was indicted last Friday on first-degree premeditated murder charges and aggravated assault. Investigators believe Vanderhall shot and killed 19-year-old Marlon Jarvis in that tavern parking lot July 20th. He was arrested in Coweta County, Georgia, and has since been extradited. He now remains in the Escambia County Jail with no bond. A Bay Minette man has died after a crash with a semi-truck yesterday. 34-year-old Chase Sharp was killed when his SUV rear-ended a big rig on I-65 Monday morning. Alabama troopers say Sharp was not wearing a seatbelt at the time of that crash. He was pronounced dead at the scene, and troopers say the semi was disabled and partially on the roadway when Sharp's vehicle crashed into it. The ALEA continues to investigate. A Mobile man has been sentenced on federal charges stemming from a deadly shooting on New Year's Eve.
Back in April, 23-year-old Thomas Earl Thomas pleaded guilty to shooting an illegal 40 Glock pistol that had a Glock switch. On New Year's Eve, Thomas fired the weapon into a group of people and it led to one death and nine injuries. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison by a U.S. district judge. Thomas still is facing multiple charges locally, including intentional murder and first-degree assault in Mobile County District Court.
And that is News Radio's Joe Ford reporting. A Walt Disney World theme park is back to regular operations today, but this is after a bear was spotted inside the park. That bear was captured. Florida wildlife expert Ron McGill says that thousands of bears here live across the state.
There are approximately 4,000 bears in the state of Florida now, and the majority of that population is in the central part of the state. So we're seeing more and more of these incidences where bears are seeing people and vice versa. But of course, having one in the Magic Kingdom will draw a lot of attention.
And Florida wildlife officials were able to catch that bear in a backstage area near the Magic Kingdom's Frontierland on Monday. Disney had to temporarily close down a portion of the park when the bear was spotted inside. Experts do believe it was most likely just looking for food, since they're normally trying to pack on a little extra weight before the start of winter time. And Pensacola's Blue Wahoos are headed to the playoffs. The regular season ended last Sunday with a win over the Mississippi Braves. This will now be the seventh time in the last 8 years that the Wahoos have made the playoffs. And those are going to begin with a best-of-three series against the Montgomery Biscuits. I believe the first game is tonight in Montgomery, and then a second and a possible third game in the series would be played here in Pensacola on Thursday and Friday. And it is 5:34. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
The weather today will be absolutely gorgeous. After a cool start, we'll end up with highs in the upper 80s. Sunny and dry around the area. No chance for rain, and the humidity again on the low side today. That's going to be a little different on Wednesday as some higher humidity returns to the area. And we bring on a slight chance for rain late in the day Wednesday and into the evening hours. I'm Chief Meteorologist Alan Strum with your WEAR News weather forecast.
It is 67 in Pensacola, 71 in Gulf Breeze, and 64 in Milton. Our next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
News Radio Pensacola is your trusted source for hurricane coverage. If a hurricane approaches, News Radio Pensacola will provide you with the latest forecasts and warnings from the National Hurricane Center. If a hurricane approaches, News Radio Pensacola will help you find resources for disaster relief. If a hurricane approaches, News Radio Pensacola will interview experts on hurricane preparedness and safety.
No one covers the storms like News Radio 92.3.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. At Anderson, we know Subarus are built better, and we're not the only ones who think so. Subarus earn more IIHS Top Safety Pick Plus awards than Honda, Toyota, or Hyundai brands since 2013 as of July 2023. When it comes to safety, Subarus are better. And when it comes to longevity, well, Subaru wins there too. According to a study by Experian Automotive, Subaru leads the industry in longevity with 96% of vehicles sold in the last 10 years still on the road today. More than Honda or Toyota brands. Hands down, Subaru has the longest lasting vehicles in the automotive industry, all of which makes it easy to love a Subaru from Anderson Subaru. Visit us on Highway 29 just north of Car City, Pensacola, or shop us online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Based on Experian Automotive non-luxury vehicles in operation excluding trucks and vans versus total new registrations for model years 2013 through 2022 as of December 2022.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, Pensacola Bay Oysters, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
The cost of healthcare is all in the news. Tune in this morning at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel as ProHealth will be the guest and discussing how ProHealth medical membership programs can help you take out the stress and cost of healthcare. That's this morning at 10 as ProHealth will be the guest on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
More news, more talk with Markley Van Kevin Robbins on at 11, right after the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Morning, everyone. We're here for public forum. Public forum is an opportunity for the public to get up and speak about anything they'd like to discuss.
I just conclude by saying, paraphrasing a line from the movie Field of Dreams, if you build it, they'll come and they're going to destroy it.
We don't need to destroy our environment so somebody can have a house. Now, I realize that we're going to grow, and I'd like for y'all to pay attention to me. I didn't come up here just to have fun today.
I'm writing notes.
You're making notes?
I'm writing notes. That's all I'm doing.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I apologize. But I've seen two people in this place never look up at the people that were speaking during the time that they were speaking, and I chastised them back some time ago.
Why is the alternative subdivision provision a mistake? Because it allows developers to cram houses into tiny tracts with virtually no lot lines to maximize profits at the sake of the existing community. In doing that, hundreds of acres are clear-cut and bulldozed, displacing wildlife and creating erosion and flooding.
Now, I had to have an acre of land for them helicopters to land. I support my military. That's the reason I am here. The developer down the street, they don't give, excuse my French, a about the property or anything else. The only thing they want to do is come in there and make their money and leave. They care nothing about the property or anything else about it. They're going to put their property in there and they're going to leave. They're done with it.
So, the Santa Rosa County Commission yesterday had a meeting that was about 7.5 hours long, all about the Land Development Code. Land Development Code, if you're not familiar, it's typically referred to as the LDC for Land Development Code. Land Development Code tells you things like subdivision designs and streets and property, you know, when you set back your house off of the property line and how trees can get removed and how signs and billboards can be put up or not and lots of stuff. It's a huge thing, hundreds of pages long. And it's one of the key documents that controls how development takes place. You know, and development, I tell you, I know you know this, but there's some people who might be unfamiliar, and I don't want to leave anybody behind the conversation. Development is a catch-all phrase that covers the process of turning land into buildings. I mean, that's it, okay? So when people talk about developers, developers are people who turn land into buildings or who, you know, convert raw land into usable land for a purpose with buildings and parking lots and sewers and electrical and all that kind of stuff, okay? And people were angry. Very, very angry. And this was the one opportunity for them to really bring out the anger. And I understand why they're angry, okay? And they're angry about overdevelopment, as in, you know, we used to live in this wonderful, natural, wooded, beautiful, scenic, semi-rural kind of area, and you've just paved paradise and destroyed it.
The once and future paradise of the Redneck Riviera has no future. The historical live oaks are ripped out of their ground where they lived and provided habitat for thousands of God's creatures. Santa Rosa Sound has evolved into one large retention-detention basin for the stormwater runoff containing roadway oils and other stuff, including fertilizer from the lawns that have replaced the forest floor.
Yeah, so again, people are frustrated. They're frustrated about clear cutting, which is the removal of all the trees on a property. They're frustrated about, you know, red clay running off into the waterways and polluting them and killing the micro algae and things that grow in the water or that, you know, just are good for the water, you know, choking out things that are good for the water because it creates a kind of a filter that makes the sunlight not be able to get in so they can't photosynthesize. There's lots of stuff to this. Generally speaking, flooding problems that come from overdevelopment and not managing the water properly. And just, I mean, across the board, people are frustrated. And this was their meeting. And they're frustrated about the alternate subdivision plan. And in case you're not familiar, this is something we've been talking about for quite some time now, but the alternative subdivision plan really came into the public conversation heavily after it was passed in the last Land Development Code revision 2 years ago. And it was the one that would have allowed Jubilee to happen. Jubilee is this giant, I always forget the number, I want to say it's 2,700 acres, but it's an enormous parcel of land in North Pace, like off of Chemukla Highway, Willard Norris Road, kind of that vicinity, that area. And it would have allowed that 2,700 acres of... Candy, would you just look it up real quick? How large is Jubilee for me? I always can't remember this number exactly, and I'm probably going to get it wrong. So instead of having to build an agricultural RR, Ag-RR is the zoning, one house on each acre, so you cannot have more than... 2,700, I had it right. Yay, one time. Okay, so instead of being only able to build 27 homes, one per acre, the idea of the alternative subdivision plan is that you put a significant percentage of the land into permanent conservation status. It can never be developed. And then you cluster the total aggregate density of the property onto a smaller footprint on that property. Like, say, if you clustered 2,700 homes instead of on 2,700 acres, one per acre, if you clustered it onto, say, you know, 600 acres at five an acre, or on, you know, 700 acres at a quarter acre apiece, it's the same total number of homes, but you can build them on a much smaller area, which the argued benefit is then you can build fewer roads and you have less roadage to maintain, and it's easier to provide infrastructure to that area. The problem is, as the Fowler family has repeatedly got up and explained to people, is that dramatically changes the nature of that 700 or 600 or 500 or whatever acres where you do build the extra density, because clustered housing is going to be a completely different character than one house per acre, like they like to live in and like the people who bought an agricultural land enjoy. And we've talked about how the philosophically I'm really on the Fowler's and the opponent's side here, because it allows developers to, even though the overall density doesn't change, so the overall impact on roads doesn't really change, the real perceived and lived effect of being close to the parts where the housing is clustered is dramatic. And it gets done without having to go through a zoning hearing where you'd have to apply for an increase in density. And people showed up. They've been showing up for a year at least. The Fowlers show up to every meeting, them and their kids. Sweet, wonderful family, David, Anna, Laura, and I forget who the other one is. But anyway, they get up and talk. And, you know, David Jr., that's right. And then they get up and talk, and they say some very interesting things. And they're persistent. I mean, they've been at every meeting, like every meeting. And yesterday was their big show. It was their chance to really push back. And they showed up and they explained things like the alternate subdivision plan does net increase density. Because, for example, if you have 100 acres that you want to develop, normally at an acre per house, you also have to build roads, for instance, and retaining ponds. But if you can cluster the homes, you get the full 100. Whereas if you build it on a normal subdivision, you might only get 80 because of the space that the infrastructure takes up. And I think they're right about that. I'm particularly with them in the fact that this is an upzoning in practice that you don't have to ask for permission from the zoning board to do. And other concerns, lots of other concerns that they have about this thing, including the damage that it does to the way of life of people who buy agricultural land. And so this is an objection that people have to that particular provision. So you go through this meeting, and I did not watch the whole 7 hours. Good Lord. I'm getting there. I mean, I got through about 3 hours. And once I realized what was going to happen in yesterday's meeting, I realized I had to really watch this meeting carefully because, I mean, I was going to watch anyway, but I wouldn't normally report on it the next day because I usually don't get to meetings quite that fast. I try to get them all so I can give you the full context. I did not get to all of it. But here's where things got interesting. So loads of people got up and talked about the alternative subdivision plan yesterday and, you know, how they don't like what it's doing. There are other places besides Jubilee where this is being used. And one of the concerns was that, like, conservation land wouldn't stay that way forever, that it could be changed later. That turns out not to be the case, as Tom Danheiser, the county attorney, very clearly explained yesterday. It's actually written into the plat. So, like, each homeowner in the subdivision has an interest share in the park, for example, that gets created, the conservation land. And so the only way to undo that would be if you, like, if everybody, 100% of the people agreed to do it, which could happen if you had, for example, like a large conglomerate that owned all of the properties and it was a rental subdivision, let's say. Maybe they could change it later on. So you could take 1,000 acres, you could build 1,000 homes on 200 or 250 acres, and then later come back and decide to undo the plat and, you know, change things so as to build on the other 750 acres. To build more homes in the end, to upzone it in the end, in effect, okay? But that was a hypothetical, a long-term, maybe it could happen that way or not. So you get down to the question of the alternative subdivision plan after the people are talking, and the very beginning of this was Colton Wright explaining what the purpose of the thing was, to create conservation land and not cost taxpayers for the upkeep. And that, you know, buffering, and just like they were talking about having a 100-foot buffer between people who live outside the alternative subdivision and the first house inside the alternative subdivision. They're talking about, Kerry Smith said, maybe we could trade a requirement that they go on sewer instead of having septic. Maybe that's a way. They were trying to save the alternative subdivision plan. And then you had this comment from Sam Parker, kind of in the early part of the conversation.
A bunch of people say, hey, I don't want alternative subdivision. I wouldn't lose any sleep if we didn't have the alternative subdivision either.
Oh, see, he has been a staunch defender. He is, in fact, very adamant about his reasons for defending the alternative subdivision. And then suddenly he kind of signals that, you know, this is not the hill that I want to die on. And he specifically says that. This is not the hill I want to die on.
And again, like I said, I wouldn't lose sleep over this either way. This is not a die on a hill issue for me. I know why we passed the alternative subdivision.
And he still believes in it. But what he's noting, and I think properly so, is that there are so many people against this. 1,000 people have signed a petition to get rid of it on the online site created by the Fowlers. And that it doesn't necessarily solve some of the problems and that they're having a challenge with it. And so they kind of go through this big conversation about the alternative subdivision plan. And, you know, Colton Wright asked the question, well, do we want to remove it? No. Do we want to modify it? Yes.
Is there an appetite to remove the alternative subdivision as presented?
Either want to modify it or remove it.
Okay. So doesn't seem to be a huge appetite to remove it. Sounds like from the discussion there's more of an appetite to take it, use the creativity, and add some restrictions there. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Sam said at that point to remove or to modify. So then they get to agreement about the 100-foot buffer. They're all kind of involved. They're all on that plan. And then all of a sudden, after they have this conversation about is there any hypothetical way the conservation land would go out of conservation status, Sam Parker all of a sudden just says, you know what?
I might regret what I'm about to say, and that's why I preface it with maybe it's because it's approaching lunchtime. But I'm going to say it because in the 7 years I've sat here, I've gotten to get called more names and catch more criticism than y'all have, and I don't wish that upon my biggest enemy, but I'm just saying I'm going to tell you how my gut feels. My gut feels like we're trying to push a boulder uphill.
And he says, you know what? Look, in a long, rambling Sam Parker way, he says, I believe in this alternate subdivision plan. I believe in it, but the public does not. The public doesn't believe in this. And we got a vote coming up to reauthorize the local option sales tax, the half cent next year. And if they don't trust us and don't believe in us and don't think that we represent them, we are never going to get that reauthorized. And I think, you know what?
Man, this goes back to one of those things where I've been part of those decisions from my guts. Like, oh my God. Like, and I regretted it. I'm just letting y'all know, I'm going to exit the conversation of the alternative subdivision. I'm going to be a nay vote on it. And so with that, I'm going to respect the four of y'all, and I'm not going to make any more comments or conversation on alternative subdivision because I'm going to vote against that provision.
First one of the five who said, I'm going to vote against it. I just don't want to have it anymore. Let's get rid of it. Let's do what the people want and get rid of it. So they have more wrangles, more conversations, and at the end...
So as far as the alternative subdivision...
James Calkins.
I would like to motion to table that item from this discussion today.
Meaning to put it off, not remove it.
And I do so asking for a second.
Shoot, I'll go one further. I'll make a motion to take it out.
I'll second it.
That's Kerry Smith, motions to get rid of it. Sam Parker seconds.
Right,
their system automatically cuts out loud noise.
Are we going to vote on the screen or just by eye?
Do
okay,
hands.
We'll do a show of hands and eye. All those in favor of removing the alternate subdivision provision from the Land Development Code? All those opposed? All those opposed? Okay. So it's... Is that 4-1?
Nay.
I would still want to.
Okay. So let the record show it was 4-1 to remove alternative subdivision with Commissioner Calkins against.
Wow. I'm just telling you, as somebody who's been, you know, watching Santa Rosa County politics all these years, I did not see that coming. And the people won. The people who showed up and made their case, the Fowlers who have led this charge, made their case, and they won. They got the alternative subdivision plan removed. Now, you still can go and ask for a zoning change. You still can create a PUD. You know, there's all different kinds of things you can do. But that one is now gone. It got removed. Now, anything that's already in process, Tom Danheiser, the attorney, said, no, that you can't get rid of those. But there's no more alternative subdivision plan in the land development code. That's it. Boom, zip, done. And this is Colton Wright, who had adamantly defended it with wanting to tweak it. And, you know, Kerry Smith had seemed to be willing to tweak it, and Sam Parker was until he wasn't. And so, but I, listen, reading the room and reading the politics and who's really, I think this was probably the right move. Sometimes you got to lead by telling the people that they're wrong, and sometimes you got to lead by saying that we're going to do what the people want. I mean, that's what it means to be a representative, even if you believe in the thing. 437-1620. So surprise shocker yesterday at Santa Rosa County Commission meeting, the Land Development Code, getting rid of the alternative subdivision plan. I'm Andrew McKay.
When hiring a repairman, you want to make sure you pick the right person for the job. When it comes to plumbing, there's just one name to remember, and that is Barbieri Plumbing. Hi, I'm Judy Barbieri Lacey, and for over 40 years, Barbieri Plumbing has been Pensacola's plumber, and we pride ourselves on being known for our expertise and integrity. One reason, we are the home of the flat rate pricing. Back in the 90s, our founder, my dad, Louis Barbieri, pioneered the flat rate pricing here in Pensacola, and it continues as a staple of our business. His ingenuity helped take the fear out of calling a repairman. The flat rate pricing simply means you know exactly what the cost is before the job starts, rather than paying by the hour. So the next time you have a plumbing problem, don't fear the call. Call Barbieri Plumbing, the local pioneer of flat rate pricing. Call 477-8782. That's 477-8782. And like us on Facebook.
The Florida Department of Health in Escambia County works to protect, promote, and improve the health of everyone in your community. Listen in today at 10:30 to the Pensacola Expert Panel when Director Marie Mott will give a public health update. That's today at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Hi, I'm Mansfield Coe from Pensacola Hardware. We are your best local and regional resource for industrial construction and hardware supplies. Daily, we meet the needs of Pensacola's construction companies, providing superb knowledge and code-compliant products. We specialize in concrete and masonry tools, fall protection products, and tools and supplies for the HVAC, mechanical, plumbing, electrical, and glass trades. Give us the opportunity to show you why we are Pensacola's oldest and best hardware and construction supply company. Pensacola Hardware, 20 East Gregory Street, downtown.
Jacqueline Harris Preparatory Academy presents The Many Faces of Tina Turner on Friday, September 29th. Sue Strawn will host an evening of electrifying music, fun, and dancing by Dance Connection. Master storyteller Robin Richard will share the story of the most amazing recording artist ever, Tina Turner. This is a fundraiser event for Favor House, so join them for a fun evening. Tickets are $55 and can be purchased at eventbrite.com.
This is Paul Epstein with Running Wild. Join me tomorrow at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Discover why we at Running Wild are the running and fitness experts in the Pensacola and Fairhope communities, specializing in fitting you in the best shoe, apparel, and training for your unique needs. We pride ourselves on serving, training, and encouraging you to reach your goals. So bring your questions tomorrow at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Pensacola Right Now with Joe and Gracie from 4 till 7 right before Dave Ramsey on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I don't care who you are, that's funny right there.
Good morning, 5:58 here on News Radio 92.3. I'll go straight into the newsroom. David Wayne is eagerly awaiting for my call to give us our headlines. David?
Very eager. I am. Community members expressing concerns over the opening of more migrant shelters in Chicago on their west side of town there. During a meeting last night, residents apparently were voicing frustration over the city's lack of transparency on the issue. Thousands of migrants apparently living at police stations and in airports right now. while waiting to be placed at a shelter. So the migrant crisis continues to get worse.
Oh, unfortunately. Oh, by the way, yesterday was the 16th anniversary of News Radio going on the air. I had it on my stuff and I forgot, so we're old enough to drive. And the Air Force also was the birthday of the Air Force yesterday, 76 years. The same day they lost the F-35? No, that was a Marine F-35.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.